Hi, I'm Dmytro Švets, your host at the Start Global Insights, where I interview experts from different countries about local business secrets and international expansion experience. Today, my guest is Maxim Pilipenko, the sales department head of Kolar. Kolar is a Ukrainian manufacturer of innovative pet products established in 1995. The company has evolved into a global entity with 500 employees and distributing its products across 78 countries. Kolar has successfully developed 16 unique brands for pets and opened international offices in Poland, United States, and China. This is a brilliant example of a resilient Ukrainian company that survived Russian invasion and increased its presence on global markets despite all challenges due to the strong vision and innovations. And today we will hear their story of international expansion. Hi, Maxim, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Dmytro. I'm glad to be here, and thanks for such a nice introduction.
Can you briefly tell what is your role in the company? What are you responsible for?
Well, I came to the company 14 years ago and started as a marketing manager for Ukrainian part of sales. And back that time, the export was really, really small. We have a couple of clients abroad. And a company offered me to start working with some export clients. Then I switched to being export manager. And then step by step, we developed a separate department that works with export. We have a lot of employees in that department. We have logistics that provides us with the export-import procedures. And I am in charge of the sales part of that export. So I'm in charge of European sales, and I have a colleague. He is in charge of sales to US region and Asian region.
Okay, so quite a big experience you have within the company. Maybe you can also describe a bit for our listeners what are the products that your company is producing and who are your clients?
Well, we are the manufacturer of product for pets, for dog, cats, aquariums. So it's mostly collars, leashes, dog clothes, dog toys, stuff like that. Our company managed to be competitive due to the essence of the company is what is innovations. So we have an R&D department, and the vision of the company owner that what we should do is we should provide products to the market that have a high level of innovative technologies, innovative thinking to those. So we either using some new technologies to the old products or new materials or trying to develop new products to be able to stand out from our competitors, especially abroad.
Can you tell what was the reason why the company, seeing the big potential in Ukraine, decided to go to the global scale?
It was several factors due to that. One of them was the difference in the currency value. So getting revenue in foreign currency is always like a warranty policy for a company in times that are rough. So this is one of the reasons. And the other reason that while visiting first international exhibition, company owner and some top personnel of the company who visited it saw the size of the market and the perspective that it can give to the company. Because in Ukraine, we already at that time had a pretty good part of the market. We were well known. We have several brands, for example, our cat litter called Supercat. It's well known and it already have a good share of the market. And on the market where you present in a big share for a long time, it's harder to grow fast. So we can grow a couple of percents each year, and that's okay for the steady market. But in the international market where we come in as a new player, we can grow 10%, 100% a year because we get in a new share of the market. So I guess those two reasons were that we decided to go international, and the innovation as a tool going international was developed during first 3-4 years doing that.
Mm. And if we were talking about this time, so this is like 15 years ago, and the export activities among Ukrainian companies at that time, especially for small business, was not so highly developed. Did you have any strong challenges, and how did you get this understanding how to go abroad, what steps to take, and what you have begun with in this journey?
Well, to be honest, back that time we didn't have like a map of steps that we followed. We didn't have the idea that those are the steps that for 10 years we are going to do. And we were developing by taking chances and checking what works best. And like one of the major changes we made, and that I can mention as a really successful step, first, our export, all of our export were done directly from Ukraine to our customer. And that's the way we are doing now, for example, for Asian regions, for US sometimes. And that successful step was, and back that time, the problem was that you not only have to find a customer, work with him on the price and explain him the value of your products and the competitiveness of your products, you also have to make him sure that the company is trustworthy. And back that time, Ukraine was not well known, and all of those points were hard. And then you will have to explain him that, hey guys, you have to do direct import from Ukraine. And Ukraine was not the popular country to buy products from. They didn't know any procedures. Most of our customers said, yeah, we can do that from China. We know everything how to do that. And we do not know how to do that from Ukraine. And that was a big barrier on the path to export. And one of our successful steps was to open our own companies, as we have now in Europe and US. So speaking about Europe, first we opened a company, the same owner as we have here, opened a bank account, hired Polish accountants, and this way we had a huge opportunity when we're looking for a customer, and when he places order, we can say him that everything is manufactured in Ukraine, but all the economic relations and documentary relations will be done inside the European Union. So there are no differences for you with any your current procedures. And that was a huge, huge advantage that we get.
Mm-hmm.
And now we already have also, and back that time we also hired outsource warehouse where we brought products. That was not our warehouse, and there were no our employees there. It was like a hub.
Mm-hmm.
We were getting like 10, 20 orders from the clients, putting them in one car, bringing to that warehouse, unloading, and giving them directions where to send those products using European carriers. We still do that for our clients, but since the beginning of the war, we also opened our own warehouse, rented it. We hired our own Polish employees, and brought the stock of products there. So that's the next our advantage, that we can supply products faster using the stock we have there.
So do I understand correct that your clients that you were serving through your European department and warehouse were the B2B customers, your partners that were selling that goods to the direct to the B2C customers afterwards?
Yeah, all our customers are B2B clients. So it's either pet shop. That's the smallest of our customers is a pet shop. He buys mm-hmm. like our minimum order is 500 euros, and mm-hmm. Pet shop can order it through our B2B portal online. He can pick the products, order them, and speak to our manager. We will deliver them. Then mm-hmm. we also do have customers like pet shop chains. For example, in Britain, we are supplying a Pets Corner pet shop chain. They have 140 huge pet stores across the Britain. And we deliver mm-hmm. them to their main warehouse in a one truckload. And they distributing to their own pet shops. Mm-hmm. And one other way we also supply our customers is like we have a wholesale partner some kind of a distributor who works with his region, and we supply him a truckload of our products that he chooses, and then he distribute them to his own clients, which are also pet shops. So that's the other way we also work.
Clear. You are now exporting to 78 countries. How did you choose, how did you make the selection of the countries, and what was the approach?
Well, first of all, let's make clear, 78 countries is the number of countries we ever exported to.
Uh-huh.
Some of them were like one-time export, because sometimes our products doesn't fit the market. Sometimes the customer just looking for something and trying lots of different products and manufacturers. Right now, we have about 20-30 countries that we do supply regularly.
Still quite a big number.
Yeah, quite a big number. And like the most powerful of the regions are surely European region, US sales, also Asian sales. We have a really huge customer in Japan. Even though the country is small, but the market there is big. And
just before our recording, I made an episode with two parts with Japanese expert, and we exactly discussed that they love pets and they just adore their dogs and cats. So this is quite a good market.
Yeah.
So for those listeners that would like to understand more the Japanese market, look for the episode about Japan. And maybe you will find the collar production on the shelves of Japanese supermarkets and pet stores as well.
Yeah, that might happen. One of our most popular products, Puller, that's a purple ring for dog training. That's one of the products our partner in Japan sells a lot. And as you mentioned, Japan is a really interesting market due to the culture. They have a culture of caring for pets and high level of care for pets. But our success on that market was through our partner, because he is a wholesaler. We do not deal with separate pet shops, because to do that, you have to have a deep understanding of the culture, of the market, of the language. And all of that is provided by our partner. We communicate with him, we do wholesales, and he distributes that to pet shops and provides marketing activities through those.
Coming back to the country choice, how did you choose, what was the approach of choosing the countries?
There were two main ways that we used while approaching. First one was thought out approach. It's when, hey, let's think where we should go. And obvious choice was Europe, because Europe, lots of countries, different countries, but united by one currency, by one laws of import-export, and being really close across the border going to Poland. So that was like first and obvious choice, and we opened there a company, and that was a really, really powerful thing to do. The second country done the same way was US. And even though lots of difficulties due to the distance and delivery, due to the different laws, much more different than ours or European, but the size of the market is so big that it worth it. So mostly those two directions were chosen by us and pushed by us right now.
Did you narrow down in Europe? Because Europe is also quite a bunch of countries and with different mentality and I don't know the number of pet owners, etc.
To be honest, we did not. We always thought about that and tried that, but we really did not, because the size of the market is huge, and we work on the principle of the bottleneck. So we looking at the most, the factor that stops us the most, and try to overcome that. And at that time, and that was the factor of delivery, export-import procedures, and getting those boundaries of the customer. When we did that, and that's probably the point I would like to mention later on in our communication, but one of our main ways to get new customers is exhibitions, international pet exhibitions. And there are customers from all the countries. So we just went with working on those exhibitions, displaying our products, and all the rest of the concentrations were like worked out by itself. Lots of customers are coming, and some countries like our products more. Some markets with, for example, Scandinavian market, the price expectations there are really, really nice for exporters from Ukraine because they can pay high price for their top quality products. And it happens so that by itself, we have a nice presence at the Scandinavian market. But we never like aimed there intentionally. So this is the second way that works for us. The same way works for Asian region. We do have a department that works for Asia, and they just try to reach all countries, all customers, visiting exhibitions, connecting to them through emails, through like international online resources. But then it's like the invisible hand of the market that works for us, narrowing down the countries we are present at.
So in fact, you used exhibitions, trade shows to narrow down the country choice. Yeah, so that was the filter for your focus markets.
I will say that the trade shows are the funnel that take in the clients to us. And then our competitiveness and characteristics of our products are the mesh that divides and narrows down customers for us. For example, we have less presence in countries like Romania, Bulgaria, because their price expectations are different. They will eagerly buy products from company Trixie, which brings everything from China and sells less quality but much less in price. And our products are innovative, are high quality, and we never try to associate ourselves with like the cheapest product, because that's first of all, that's not our approach. Second of all, that it would be really hard to compete with China this way. So, and using those, it's by itself narrowed down the number of countries that are eager to work with us. But still, there are lots of possibilities and lots of room to expand even in those countries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you find, apart from the trade show, you know, how when you realized that, for example, Sweden is the potential market for you. How did you find these partners, distributors, pet shops? What were the channels and the approach for doing that?
Well, as I said, trade shows are the most successful channel for us. The other channel is industry meetings. We visit in like for, I guess, 13 years already, industry meeting called Global Pet Forum, which is a conference organized by oldest European magazine, pet product magazine, pet called Pets International. And the third one I will say is online presence and European printed magazines. And also there is an advice I would like to give if somebody will try to do the same. Keep in mind that first, about three pet shows, 3 years, you will be getting less customers, because in Europe they are looking if you're trustworthy, if you come into several shows in a row, and then if they see you, if they recognize you, if they know you, they will do business with you. So from the first show we got about 100 of business cards, but we get only about one order, one partner. And we spend much more money and time into that show than we get back. But the next year it was better. The year after that it was better. And that's the thing you should expect.
So this is kind of a long-term investment into growing global, yeah?
Right. It's a long-term investment, and you should have an amount of investments to do that. You should be profitable in your current business, get some money saved to start export, because you will have lots of things to adjust. like packing, like your documents being connected to the laws of the countries you're exporting to, different documents that allows you to export. And all of that takes time. All of that takes money to pay for the specialists. So that's the thing you should be expecting for 3 years and a couple hundred of thousand dollars to spend that.
That's a really interesting notice that you made, because in most cases, what I hear now is the expectation of potential exporters is to have quick money from export. Yeah, like we are now losing the Ukrainian market. We don't have possibility to earn here. So the cure for that might be the export, and we are expecting quick money from that. But reasonably, it is not so quick. Yeah, so you need to have patience. You need to have investments that you will put in that to have the result afterwards that will pay back this activity.
Yeah, sure. It can be a quick money, but that will not be a steady flow. Mm-hmm. You can go to the exhibition and you can, for example, especially if you're not used to B2B export or you're not that big in Ukraine, you are going to international exhibition, you're exhibiting there, you get in one client and you have an order of 100,000 euros. That's, that's a nice money. That's a nice order. And if you're selling in Ukraine about like 20,000 euro a month, That's like a jackpot for you. But you will not be able to copy that result going to the next exhibition and next exhibition. It's like a lottery and a chance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have chosen the regions or directions where to play, and then you've got this organic filtering through the exhibitions about the markets, the potential markets, yeah? And then I suppose that your way was to invest in PR, yeah, in brand awareness through these magazines and online presence. Can you tell a bit more about that?
That's an interesting thing, because in general, it would be the same exact thing I've just told about export. It takes time. We started by going to the exhibition, and there those magazines are coming by themselves because they're also looking for the clients. And we set up an advertisement plan for like a year ahead. And to be honest, for us, those prices were pretty high. We do one time under advertisement, and then next month they say, hey, let's do that again. And we say, no, we don't have that much of a budget. We will go with other magazine this time. And they offer us something. Most of the time they say, hey, let's do one more advertisement, and then I will get you two news blogs next month and the one next month free. Okay, we say, okay, let's go with that. And slowly we established, firstly, those relationships. And a couple of years ago, I guess 4 or 5 years ago, a company established a separate PR department. And what they've done is a really, really great thing. They established relationships with most of those media when we advertising for free. How did they do that? Because those media are desperately looking for information. Their resource is an information. So right now, our PR department have like, I guess, more than 10 huge media over the world, in US, in Britain, in Europe. Our PR department sending them newsletters. For example, hey guys, we are going to that exhibition. We will have that new product there. Or our R&D department announced that we are partnering with NASA. And I have to say that paid advertisements works worse, because when it's a news article, when it's some overview of the market mentioning our new products and our presence at the exhibition, it gains much more trust from a customer than just a paid advertisement that says, hey, our products are great, please buy them. That's the contact.
Can you tell a bit more about the NASA case? I know that you have this partnership with NASA, and I think that you are the only one Ukrainian product that is sold on NASA website.
Yeah.
Can you tell this story? How did you come to NASA, and how did you agree about that?
That's an interesting story, because personally, I am as a sales department found out about that when it's already been done, when we have that partnership. Mm-hmm. It was due to one of our guys from R&D department. Mm-hmm. He somehow visited NASA page and he saw those symbols NASA using and seen information that NASA can provide you with the right to use those symbols. And back at the time, we were aiming at the U.S. market, looking for the ways to expand our presence. And in U.S., everybody loves NASA, NASA symbols, all that space program stuff. And he contacted NASA through the contacts provided at their official webpage. And he started communicating with them and asked, hey, guys, I know you have some kind of program that where you give out those rights for free. It's a free way to get rights for to use their symbols and logos. And they said, yeah, but there are some rules that you have to meet. First and foremost, they have to check if the quality of the products are okay, if the company is okay. And I believe our R&D sent all the information about the company, links to our web pages, some samples of the products. And the representative of NASA said, yeah, okay, we like the products. We like what we see about the company. There is a letter that we agree for you to use our symbols. And we start doing that. And then they came to us by themselves and said, hey, that's a web page we have mm-hmm. that sells different products with NASA symbols. And in US, we also have a huge culture caring for pets. And we see that your products are awesome. Can we get them into our range? And we surely said, yeah, that's interesting for us also as a promotion, as being present at your web page. And that's the way we partnered with NASA.
Great story. Did you agree with NASA that if they will send some dogs or cats to the space, they will wear your colors?
Not really, but we have some products connected to that. For example, one of our collars and leashes called Evolutor, being the strongest collars and leashes on the market. Our R&D department using the same space alloy that NASA and Boeing using in building spaceships and aircraft, those aluminum alloys that are high density and that are really, really strong, but at the same time light. They are used in buckles mm-hmm. and hooks in those. So we have a direct connection with the spaceships and aircrafts also.
Amazing. So you have space technology in the productions for dogs and cats. That's
right.
that's crazy. I know that you also got the license of DC Comics. Yeah. So you have the pictures of superheroes on your products as well. Did that influence your sales and the brand awareness in the global scale?
Yeah, I will say that it did. That's much more complicated, much harder than we have with NASA. And I can tell you that there are lots of rules and technical issues you have to do using those logos.
Okay, so your products are approved by NASA and they are also approved by Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Coming back to your roadmap and your journey, your global journey, what were the biggest challenges that you experienced and maybe still experience, and how did you overcome them?
Well, thinking about that back, the times, nothing of it seems hard now. It seems like, that's the things we've done and the things we had to do. But right now, I will say that obstacles caused by Russian invasion and by war are the most complicated for now. But I really, really believe and hope that we already overcame the most complicated, for example, when Chernihiv was surrounded and we went to Ivano-Frankivsk and rented their warehouse and took all of our products from Chernihiv there. And we restarted export eventually from Ivano-Frankivsk. And then eventually when Chernihiv was freed by Ukrainian forces, we came back.
How did the war influence the attitude of your partners abroad? Were they helping you, or did you lose any contracts because of that?
It was both. It was both. And at the very beginning, we had really, really huge support. There were people from our current customers that say, "Hey guys, we cannot imagine what you're going through. We would like to support you. Let us do the prepayment." They usually were buying with like 30 days delay, and that was a huge support. We had people just sending money to our account, not for orders, but to support us. Through that type of support, our company managed to communicate and to establish relations with a Japanese foundation that helps to rebuild Chernihiv. And this foundation was founded by our Japanese distributor. So this is the way our business relationships and support of our partners helped us not only in business, but helped us to support our city and our country. And also, there is a drawback, the other opposite way. We lost some clients. And even during the war, we are coming to international exhibitions and showing that our company still works, that we are supplying, and that helps to change the opinion and get back the trust of the customers.
From the point of view of your journey that you have now already, this more than 15 years, of going global, what kind of an advice would you give to Ukrainian exporters that are just starting this journey by themselves? What kind of do's and don'ts? Yeah, so what you should do and what you should definitely not do?
Well, I think that what you definitely should do, you should try to be prepared for the next steps, try to make a roadmap. You should be ready to invest, and but I also advise not to overthink, because sometimes it's a really tempting way to do. I will be getting ready for years. I will be looking through our packages. I will be tweaking all the products to the way I think it will fit the European customer. Well, to be honest, you will, if you're not living in Europe, if you're not hiring European marketing managers, you will never know exactly what the customer in Europe know. You might be close to that, but you will never know exactly. So it's in my point of view, it's much better to get ready at some level, to adjust your packaging to the languages needed, to adjust your packaging to the basic law requirements needed, and then to introduce your products into the market at one, two pet shows, and to see how the market reacts. And most of the implementations we have in our packaging and our documents are requested by our clients. So we're selling the right now we start selling to one of Italian pet shop chains called Arcaplanet. They're really huge. And they said, "Hey guys, there is a new European law that just been put into place, and we need you to, all of the packages have to be labeled with the type of materials used according to the ways it can be recycled. So please implement that in all the packages. Those are the charts you need to use." And to know it by ourselves, it will take lots of time, lots of money, just to get across that requirement. So that's my advice.
So you mean like testing your products within the real customer environment, yeah, and then get the feedback and understand if you need to adjust or it is okay to sell.
Yeah, I think that the best way is to in development, it's called MVP, minimum value product. So meeting like 40% of things needed, you just go in there and doing tests through offering that product to the customer. And this way, it would be much more efficient, faster, and efficient cost-wise for you than to doing a year of different tweaking, development, and research being in Ukraine and researching the market.
Great, great, Maxim. Thank you for this story. It was an amazing story. And I urge our listeners from other countries that are listening to this podcast to have a look at, especially if you have pets, you have dogs or cats, look to the collar products that are NASA and Warner Brothers certified and approved. You can find them on the website of Collar, and I will put the link in the description of this episode. And by the way, this is not a paid advertisement. This is just because the product is very great and Ukrainian, of high quality and high value added. So please visit their website. And if you have pets, buy the space technology collar from Collar, yeah, from Collar Company. Yep. And you will be amazed how good it is done and how great does it look. Maxim, thank you again for the story and for your experience that you shared with our listeners.
Thanks, Mitro. And I was really glad to be present here and to share experience and some small insights I have. And I'm really sure that we will be keep growing and be developing at Ukrainian and international market both.
Great, great. And I hope that someday we will see your products on Mars or on other planets as well.
Let's hope.